Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The MS IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started.
Good morning, Ben. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. How about yourself, Scott?
I have a cup of coffee. I have not spilled it on my keyboard just yet. Sure, that's coming in a couple minutes. So stay tuned for further details.
That's always a good start. I already finished my coffee for the morning, so I don't have that problem.
That sounds like an operational deficiency. You better move on to cup number two immediately.
I know I have to make cup number two yet. That'll be first on the list after this.
That sounds like just a horrible way to live. Get the coffee. Main line.
Yeah, I just need to move a coffee pot up into my office.
We can make that happen. It sounds like a good experiment to get you going on. So what are we talking about this week?
This week, besides coffee?
Yeah, besides coffee.
Besides coffee? How about SharePoint administration in Office 365?
Oh, sounds like a real barn burner. Let's go ahead and get into it. What's important with SharePoint administration in Office 365?
The important part about SharePoint administration in Office 365 is you no longer have to worry about the user profile service.
But you do a little bit.
But you still have to worry about that Azure AD Connect if you want your AD users. And you still have some of that user profile stuff to set up, but you don't have to try to get the sync service to start and all of that.
Yeah, well, at least somebody took care of part of it for us, right?
Yes, exactly. Now Microsoft gets to deal with it. But one of the biggest things, at least from my perspective, is just being aware of some of the limits and boundaries in Office 365. SharePoint Online, especially because you no longer have control over certain things with SharePoint Online. Primarily, you don't have access to the full central admin. So there are certain settings, certain features that you just can't turn on, you don't have access to, you don't have the option to increase the limit of, things like a large list limit. So you really need to be aware of, especially in SharePoint Online, some of those boundaries, limits that exist within it that you don't want to violate, because if you violate them or if you run up against that limit, there's really nothing you can do.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. So consuming SharePoint as a service means you're doing just that, right? You've purchased a service and you're not only bound to these limits as they stand today, but you're also bound to them as you move forward. So Microsoft can move things around. What's a good example? We used to have a 1 terabyte limit per site collection, right? And in today's world, I can scale to 25 terabytes per site collection, at least if I'm in the eSKUs and things like that. So it's a moving target, right, as time goes on?
Exactly. And that's one of the good examples of something that's really nice about SharePoint Online is you do on-prem. There is no way I would want to give my user a 25 terabyte site collection limit and have to put that entire site collection in a 25 terabyte database. But now that Microsoft is dealing with it, I'm all about 25 terabyte site collections. If you want to have one record center, shove all your records in there and let it grow to 25 terabytes, go for it. It's not my problem anymore.
Well, it will be your problem at some point. But again, that's neither here nor there.
Okay. The database is not my problem anymore.
Yeah. But I think it's good to point that out, right? So you lose a little bit of time, or really you gain some time back on the server management side, right? I don't have to manage a database anymore. I'm not managing the service and the availability of that thing. But now I've got to spend a lot more time, hopefully, on planning and service delivery. So we've purchased this service, but we have to deliver it and get it out to you, all of our users in the organization. I always like to tell people that a lot too. You know, if I spend 50% less time on server management, that's awesome, because that's 50% more of my time that I get to spend with the business, helping them move things forward.
Exactly. And that's one of the big benefits of SharePoint Online is I've heard other people talk about that too, is that us as SharePoint admins, you and I, we used to spend a fair amount of time, whether it was patching servers, applying cumulative updates, like you said, making sure those services were highly available, making sure our servers could scale and handle the traffic. Now all of that time is freed up. So as admins, we kind of need to focus more on, okay, some of those services, how can we help the business? How can we help the users? How can we spend our time on that type of stuff instead of just keeping everything running? I know even the architecture, another one, we talked about that 25 terabyte limit. Another limit that can actually get people, that's kind of on the flip side, as you lose some of the control, is web applications. I have a lot of clients that have multiple web applications running. Maybe they're using some of the hostname site collections. They want different URLs to get to different areas of their business, at least top-level URLs. Now in SharePoint Online, you get essentially a single web application. When you stand up your tenant, you pick your name. For instance, like when I picked my company name, I picked IntelliJink. My SharePoint site is now intellijink.sharepoint.com. I can't change that URL. I can't add additional URLs to my tenant. That's my URL, and I'm stuck with it. So when you initially stand up that SharePoint tenant, make sure what you select for that company, for that top-level SharePoint site, is a URL you want to have forever, unless you're ready to do a migration to a new tenant.
Yeah, there's a lot in a name, right? It's a very important thing.
There is. And another one I've also found is that managed path. I have a lot of clients that like to do different managed paths, maybe one for projects, one for teams. They use those managed paths to help kind of separate out some of those SharePoint sites. In SharePoint Online now, you no longer have those managed paths. They give you two of them. You have sites and you have teams. Those are the only two available. You have to use one or the others. There's no adding to them, removing from them. It is what it is.
It very much is. And I think it's important also to recognize where these limitations might actually be features in some cases, right? So in the past, you would have had a web application maybe for your projects. So you would have done projects.contoso.com. And then maybe you had a managed path in there, slash project name, slash blah, blah, blah. And in, like you said, in this new world, you've got kind of one canonical URL, your fully qualified domain name to get in there. So you've got contoso.sharepoint.com. And then it's just slash sites or slash teams. That's not the end of the world if you're leveraging the features in the platform, right? So if you encourage your users to do things like go through and follow SharePoint sites, well, now you'll start to be able to leverage some of the rich discovery mechanisms, and those sites will appear on the SharePoint homepage. They'll appear in applications like Delve, really anything that's based on the graph. And they'll also get access to them on things like mobile, right? Whether it's through OneDrive or the SharePoint applications, things like that. So you get out of this mode of, you know what, you always had to remember a URL or you always had to bookmark something to, well, here's your homepage for everything. Just go here and everything will just kind of work for you. And then what you can do is you can still give users vanity URLs to drive those things home, right? So I know in my organization, we do a couple of what's called an IDP-initiated smart link. So we federate and do some things like that. But effectively, what we do is we create an internal URL for something like OneDrive, right? So, you know, typically you have tenant name, so contoso-my.sharepoint.com to get to your OneDrive. Well, we redirect all that stuff straight through ADFS with an IDP-initiated smart link, and we do it all through a URL, just onedrive.contoso.com. So our users, when they want to go to OneDrive, just type onedrive.contoso.com and you're off and running. You want to go to SharePoint? Just type sharepoint.contoso.com and that'll take you to the SharePoint homepage. You want to go to Outlook or your mailbox? Just go to outlook.contoso.com and et cetera, and just push those things through. It doesn't work really well to tell somebody, go to that document that's shared at sharepoint.contoso.com, but it works great if you just want to send them into the homepage and drive behavior a little bit.
Yeah. Very nice. And I've been telling clients that too. I feel like with SharePoint Online, Microsoft is kind of getting away from how I traditionally saw people structure their SharePoint environments on-prem, where it was a very hierarchical structure. You had your top-level site and you created essentially what looked like a root system going off of that, where you started at the top and just went down to all of your other sites, navigated through that site hierarchy, where now it feels a lot more flat. Especially with the groups and every group getting its own site collection. It's a lot more, I feel like, site collection based, where you get a whole bunch of site collections. And then, like you said, you go follow the site. You let those sites be surfaced through Delve using the graph. So now you're just going directly to those sites you need to access rather than navigating your way down through a tree of spider-webbed sites in your environment.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting information architecture things, right? When we used to approach that, you really had to understand, is it the ways people kind of worked and went for stuff. So generally you had three classes of searchers or kind of personas around that. You have the people who are very navigation based. So they know how to go into like a mega menu or an expanding menu. And so I clicked on departments and then I clicked on teams and then I clicked on this and this and this and this. And that's how I got there every time. And then you had your second class of searchers who were really searchers, right? They would go in and they'd say, you know, I want to find the marketing site. So I'm just going to go search for marketing and then it's going to pop up every time. And then you had the people that really couldn't do either and they were going to be left behind. So whatever for them. But really that sweet spot is catered in the middle to the searchers, right? So there are opportunities to offer things like structured navigation or kind of known ways to navigate around your environment. So let's direct you to a SharePoint homepage or let's create our intranet and have a really nice menu on the intranet. But that's the only place that menu is going to be, right? For the rest of it, just direct you into search and let you run away and have a good time with it because we can surface way more data than just sites in our search too.
Yeah, exactly. So moving on to some other topics, I know, again, we're both SharePoint on-prem admins. We've done it for a while. I used to write all kinds of PowerShell. I still do write all kinds of PowerShell for SharePoint on-prem environments. When we get into SharePoint Online, do we have options to do PowerShell, write some scripts? How does that all work with SharePoint Online versus SharePoint on-prem?
You have a couple of options. There's several PowerShell libraries that come out. So PowerShell is absolutely still there. You also have some interfaces that you might have been using on premises for management. So whether you were doing things like C# or PowerShell, and maybe you were doing CSOM, right? A little bit of that client-side object model, things like that. You can continue to leverage all those things. There's the CSOM published specifically for SharePoint Online, a version of it anyway, right? That goes up and does those things. So Microsoft publishes an official PowerShell library. So there's the SharePoint Online Management Shell. And that does a couple of things. You know, over the years, it's gotten a little bit better. Used to be a lot of just getters, right? You know, typically we want like getters and setters. So I want to be able to get the data, manipulate the data, and then reset it and update it. So it used to be a lot of getters. Now there's some more kind of setters along the way in there too. So you can do things like manage site collection admins, SCAs, through PowerShell and go ahead and make those things happen. You can also manage groups, sites to a certain degree. I found that PowerShell, at least the Microsoft stuff, the SharePoint Online Management Shell, is really good for enumeration and reporting and kind of getting some data back and formatting a little bit the way you need to in PowerShell. There's also a set of PowerShell commandlets published by the Patterns and Practices group. So there's a SharePoint PMP project, and a lot of people think about that as more SharePoint dev. But one of the things that's published in there is a wrapper for CSOM, and that's the PMP PowerShell project. Connects a little bit differently, kind of the same, little weird. There's some collision and commandlet names and things like that. But if you're looking for things that you can't do with Microsoft's official online management shell, the PMP PowerShell commands will quite often fill the gap in there. And if they don't fill the gap, it's all hosted on GitHub and it's really easy just to submit an issue or a request for some new functionality and get all that stuff in there.
Yeah, and with those PMP commandlets, I use those a lot. Did you see that? I don't know. It was recently. They actually renamed all of those to help avoid those collisions because I had the same thing you did. They were using SPO for everything and you got a lot of collisions. Now all of those are PMP instead of SPO.
Yeah.
To help avoid those collisions.
Well, it also depends on where you're at in your management life cycle, right? I think one of the nice things about where you and I are is we follow the news a lot and we see what's going on. So I think you and I tend to keep up with that. I see a lot of environments, or I know just from talking to people, that they might have installed PMP PowerShell a year ago and never updated it since, which is kind of sad. They should really go ahead and update that. So depending on where you are in your life cycle of managing these things and getting up to date, there's all sorts of weirdness in there. And that's an interesting thing too, right? Them going through and renaming a bunch of commandlets and remapping the aliases and things like that. I bet that led to a little bit of work for you just on the management front to go back and rename and retest and see what changed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You go open it up now and it's like all of these SPO commandlets are going to be deprecated. They're going away. I think coming up here in the next couple months, they're actually, right now you can use either or. I think maybe a couple months from now, all the SPO ones are going away. So if you do have scripts running and scheduled, you're going to have to switch them all to the PNP, the new naming convention. So something else to be aware of if you have written a bunch of those scripts already and you haven't updated, you haven't noticed that, go check it out. Make sure you update your scripts before everything breaks and the wheels fly off the wagon.
Yep. You'll also have a little bit of user management, right? So you mentioned the user profile service. If you do things like directory synchronization, or you've tied yourself into some other LDAP directory, Active Directory, or something else, you might need to do some user profile management or really profile data management outside of SharePoint. So you'll have to use things like the Azure AD PowerShell commandlets. And again, just like PMP PowerShell, there's a couple versions of that. There's the V1 stuff. There's the V2 in preview, both with a different naming convention. And that'll let you interact with your users in Azure AD. So kind of the old MSOL model, or that new just Azure AD model.
Yep. And I know another one is you also have some of that Azure Rights Management that can apply to document libraries. You can apply the information rights management. Some of that configuration setup as well also has a whole nother module. I think it's AARDM. There's another module for managing all of that information rights management stuff as well.
Yeah, there's a bunch of other stuff that's outside SharePoint, right? Like we could go down the path of Exchange commandlets to manage compliance, or things like content searches and all that good stuff. So it is spread out all over the place. You really have to know the part of the platform that you're targeting. So if I'm targeting just SharePoint, I need to be in the SharePoint specific commandlets. If I'm targeting something higher up in the tenancy, like users, well, that's probably going to be Azure Active Directory. If I'm hitting another service like compliance, well, that might be part of Azure AD, like RMS. It might be part of Exchange, like a compliance feature. Push it across. So you've got to have a little bit of knowledge about what you're trying to get at and where you're trying to go.
Yeah. So as a SharePoint admin, if you're moving into the space, you definitely still have to be aware of some of those outside services that have those hooks into SharePoint you may have to manage.
All right. So let's see. So we talked a little bit about kind of automating some of that and some of the options for PowerShell. I think one of the things we kind of glossed over was just what's up in central admin in SharePoint Online, right? It's got to be a little bit different than my on-prem central admin, because like you said, I don't have web applications. I'm not managing service applications because, you know, I don't have a bunch of new ones I can spin up, spin down, things like that. You want to talk a little bit about what's up there, just in, if I go up through the GUI and I say, I want to manage SharePoint, what can I do up there?
Yeah. So if you go up into Office 365, into your admin portal, open up that SharePoint admin portal. Like you said, it's a little different. It is limited. You have some options down the left side. Site collections has always been there on-prem. The whole interface and how it looks in SharePoint Online is a little different in how you manage site collections in terms of properties of those site collections, spinning up new ones, setting your site collection admins. You actually do have a recycle bin in the GUI in SharePoint Online to allow you to restore deleted site collections from that recycle bin. So that one's a little different. Then there's a whole bunch of them that if you go in and look at them, they essentially took the UI from SharePoint on-prem and just surfaced it in Office 365. So if you go in and look at InfoPath in SharePoint Online, the InfoPath settings there are essentially a copy of the UI from SharePoint on-prem. User profiles is another one. User profile service is there. You don't have all the sync settings since that's handled for you. But in terms of managing those user profiles, managing properties, configuring audiences, trusted host locations, promoted sites, that whole UI will look very similar to anybody that's used to managing the user profile service on-prem. Another one of those, they hijacked the UI, put it in Office 365, pulled out some of those settings that aren't applicable to SharePoint Online, and put it right there. The Business Connectivity Services, BCS, that's another one. Exact same interface as you have on-prem. Term store, records management are another two. In terms of managing your managed metadata service, creating that managed metadata, that one's there in SharePoint Online. It's the same UI, the same interface that you're always used to when adding managed metadata. Search is there. That one does have some different settings. One, you don't manage crawl schedules. SharePoint Online, it does it all in the background. They use continuous crawl. They have it set on, but you can still manage that search schema, query suggestions, your result sources. Remove search results, so any URLs you want to exclude from your search results. A lot of the search settings in terms of how search works and those keywords and dictionaries, it's all there in SharePoint Online. And the last two that really are kind of a hijack of the on-prem version, your secure store, and then managing your app catalog. Where is your app catalog? If you want to purchase apps, manage licenses, that one's a little different, but again, all the functionality is there, especially because with SharePoint Online, apps and now the SharePoint framework, or apps, add-ins, however you want to call them.
SharePoint add-ins.
SharePoint add-ins.
Yeah, you got to get on board with the terminology.
Well, so SharePoint add-ins everywhere except when you're in the SharePoint Online management, where it still says apps, and it's still the app catalog and purchase apps and monitor apps and app permissions.
You're really picky, you know that?
I am. I'm a little type A. So that's something you're definitely going to want to be aware of. Like we said, SharePoint Online, SharePoint solutions, a lot of that, all the server-side dev stuff has gone away because, let's face it, you don't have access to the servers anymore. Microsoft controls them all. So get familiar with apps. You do have to create an app site, but that's another one that is very similar to on-prem. It's a very easy transition for any SharePoint admin to go to SharePoint Online and know what's going on with apps. The one gotcha that some people don't realize, going back to the managed metadata service, if you've used the content type hub, you know that on-prem, you had to create a site, specify the content type hub, where you were going to publish content types from. SharePoint Online, that gets created for you automatically. It is going to be at your tenant, contoso.sharepoint.com/sites/content type hub. You will not see this URL listed anywhere. It won't show up in your list of site collections. There's no way to know that it exists other than to go out and see that, oh, that's where my content type hub is. So if you're using the content type hub, if you want to use it in SharePoint Online, it's still there. Just go to that URL. You'll find it. You can log into it and start setting up your content types.
Yeah, there's a couple of tricks to that. Like, make sure you know who the first person is who goes in there and they're a global admin and they're a SharePoint admin and Office 365 roles, right? Not even roles before we get into SharePoint, like SCAs and things like that. So yeah, there's some trickery there. Make sure you're set up for success. So that's awesome. There's a bunch of stuff up there. I think one of the interesting things you mentioned along the way was a couple of gotchas and things that come into play. So I think one of the biggest ones that I see folks run into is they go, well, we're managing a bunch of things up here. We have SharePoint sites, like our regular, maybe I created an intranet or we did create a bunch of team sites under that /teams managed path. But then there's a bunch of other sites that get created along the way. Like we've been talking a little bit about things like teams and groups, right? And those have site collections that back them and those were automatically provisioned. They don't show up in that list though. So how do you manage those sites?
Don't touch them. They don't show up there for a reason, and it really is. Microsoft doesn't want you messing around with those. There's a couple different site collections that are created automatically. One, if you're using the video portal and you create a new channel in your Office 365 video portal, you get a site collection. Or like you said, if you stand up a new group or a new team, you get a site collection. Those two site collections, because they are tied so tightly in with everything else, whether it's videos or whether it's teams and groups, the teams and groups ones don't show up. You really shouldn't mess with those at all from that SharePoint admin standpoint because they're managed as a part of the group. Permissions are assigned as part of the group, their own special site collections. You do have some settings you can change, some updates you can make. If you go to the group, you have within an Office 365 group the ability to navigate to that site or that site collection that's a part of the group. And from there, you can get into the site settings. You can turn features on and off. You can add additional apps, whether it's custom lists, link lists, additional document libraries. You can still do some of the SharePoint management, some of the site settings, type tasks within the site itself. Microsoft does hide some of the site settings that they really don't want you to touch, stuff like site permissions. Because you really should be managing access to that site at the group level, site permissions doesn't show up in the site settings in that site collection associated to the group. And there are some other things. So by and large, rule of thumb is don't touch those. The interesting thing is video site collections do show up in that site collection list. But again, those are ones you shouldn't touch. There are some custom lists in there, some settings to tie everything together. So those two types of site collections really should be left alone.
Well, there's one that you do have to touch. So there's a big bug in the video portal. So if you have a video channel that has more than one admin and your users have multiple SMTP addresses or kind of ways to log in, which is every user in Office 365, because you'll have your primary UPN and then your tenant one, so your blah, 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 dot on Microsoft.com. The portals become corrupted if you put more than one owner on there. So you have to go in through the back end and add your SCAs with PowerShell. Super painful, super pain in the ass, and Microsoft is like that. You know, the other thing you mentioned, I think it's great advice not to go and touch that stuff, but I don't see any problems with going in and looking at that stuff, especially when it means getting a handle on your environment. So things like those group site collections or team site collections, they do count against your pooled storage in your tenant. So it's a great idea to keep track of what's out there and what its consumption is, or maybe even want to do some simple things. So I try and do things like keep track of who's creating subsites in their groups, because they've been trying to work around some of that functionality that might not be there. And also who's doing things like creating subsites over in their My Sites, because we really want to discourage the use of things like that for people who are clicking around. So I think there's some great things that you can go in and do on the reporting surface to come back and get some data out and really give you as an admin some more actionable things to go out and talk about within your organization.
Yeah, definitely. Great advice. So this has gone quick. We're already approaching our 30 minutes. I know there's still some more topics, so we might have to come back, do another episode on SharePoint where we can talk about some of those other things, some of the sharing capabilities that are really nice in SharePoint Online and the hybrid functionality. Maybe we can do a whole episode just on hybrid.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. Sounds good. So for today, again, a high-level overview of SharePoint administration. We'll come back. We'll talk more SharePoint admin stuff in the future.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thanks, Scott. We'll talk to you later. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.